Scathing criticism of U.S. President Donald Trump's plan for Afghanistan coming from a news site run by the man who was, until recently, one of the president's closest advisors. The far-right website that used to be a reliable source of praise for the president, now bludgeoning him. The coverage seen as a sign of Steve Bannon's return to Breitbart. The former White House chief strategist, who was sacked on Friday, has been reported saying that he now plans to, quote, crush the opposition with his, quote, weapons, saying he'd, quote, go to war for the platform Trump ran on as a candidate.
Aiming to keep up the pressure surrounding North Korea, President Trump on Tuesday slapping a new round of sanctions on businesses in China for aiding Pyongyang's nuclear ambitions. The sanctions hitting six Chinese firms the Treasury Department says have directly or indirectly helped Kim Jong-un build his nuclear arsenal, whether by serving his energy needs or giving him access to international financing.
Bitcoin is just one so-called token out there, and there are now hundreds of tokens that have been issued, and most of them based upon the so-called blockchain theory, a distributed ledger so that you can see all transactions. This is the underlying technology which is getting the likes of Mark Cuban going. But really, it's actually not his first foray. In fact, one of his own portfolio companies called Unicorn is itself going to be issuing a so-called initial coin offering.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's August 23rd, 2017. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day underway. Lots coming up here on the show this morning. A little bit later on, we'll talk a little bit about unicorns. Are they overvalued at startup? One of the reporters who's been covering a lot of this in the fintech and markets, Julie Verhaj, will join us a little bit later in the program. In a minute, we'll be talking a little bit about the expansion of Ventra, the integration, I should say, of Ventra and Divvy in Chicago. But first, let's check the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures are off 36 points right now. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well, with NASDAQ futures lower by about 11 points. Around the world this morning, most Asian markets staged modest gains after overnight gains on Wall Street as geopolitical risks and turmoil at the White House have dented investor sentiment in the past few weeks, abated by while investors eyed the annual gathering of central bankers. The Nikkei gained about 0.5%, and so did South Korea's index there. Shanghai index is down almost 0.1%. In Australia, the market fell almost 0.5%. In Europe this morning, markets are also generally lower, with the FTSE off just a third. The DAX and CAC are also lower, with both of them off about a third to about 0.8%. Back in this country, futures on oil look like this. Crude oil, $47.66 a barrel, which is off about 16 cents or a third as well for that. A couple of stories that we've been watching for you overnight. Whole Foods shareholders will vote on whether to bless a union with Amazon. That organic grocery chain CEO called Love at First Sight. This will be that merger, $13.7 billion acquisition of Whole Foods by Amazon. Whole Foods has been under intense shareholder pressure to improve results and retain customers who had more chances and choices about where to get natural foods. Approval from Whole Foods shareholders today is one of the steps required to close that deal. Also today, Samsung has an event scheduled. We're likely to see the new Samsung Galaxy released. And researchers say safety systems to prevent cars from drifting into another lane or that warn drivers of vehicles in their blind spots are beginning to live up to their potential to significantly reduce crashes. Two studies by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety find that vehicles with lane keeping and blind spot monitoring systems had lower crash rates than the same vehicles without those systems. Well, our front and center this morning, Divvy is welcoming Ventra. It's an integration that's putting both of these sharing, ride-sharing, and also the CTA cards into action together in Chicago. We thought we'd bring in A.J. LaTrace, who's editor at Curb Chicago, to talk a little bit about this morning. He's been writing about it. A.J., good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Glad to have you back. Tell us what's going on here.
Yeah, so to folks who may not be familiar, Divvy is the city's bike sharing system. launched a few years ago, but the every year there's been there has been an expansion. This year there's another one. This year the city's adding 40 new stations and 400 new bikes. But another big component here is the city's also working on integrating, as you mentioned, integrating the Ventura Fare Card payment system with the bike share system. So that way, CTA riders who use their Ventura card for the L could use, you know, in theory, the same, you know, the same thing to get a Divvy bike.
Is there a sense that folks are doing that a lot, that they'll ride a Divvy bike to a CTA station or get one at a near CTA station to ride maybe the rest of the way home? Is there any data that shows this is being used?
I think that's the hope, or, you know, at least that's what seems to make sense, that, you know, there would naturally be a big bump in ridership if they use an existing fare card method. And just to be clear, it sounds like the city is working, the integration would be through an app, actually, not necessarily the Ventura card. But yeah, I mean, you know, it seems to make a lot of sense. You know, Divvy stations tend to be around transit hubs, you know, bus stops and L stations. You know, those short trips, you know, I could certainly imagine seeing people just grabbing a bike and go.
You know, the Divvy bikes seem to be working out really well. I know that in Curb Chicago and other places, I've seen some stats. Give us a sense of how many people are using these bikes and how popular Divvy has become.
Yeah, you know, we follow, there's a blog called Streets Blog Chicago, and they're definitely, you know, the expert on transit issues and topics in Chicago. And according to them, after this year's expansion, the system, which actually even includes some near suburbs like Evanston and Oak Park, will be over 600 stations and over 6,000 bikes. So you can imagine, you know, how many rides, you know, that many bikes are getting.
AJ, hang on with us. We're going to take a break here to check traffic. We'll be back with AJ LaTrace, editor at Curb Chicago.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors picked up some lost ground yesterday, the Dow Jones advancing nearly 200 points to 21,899. The S&P 500 was ahead 24 points at the close. The NASDAQ composite was up 84 to 6297. Walmart has teamed up with Google to make voice shopping easier. Beginning next month, customers will be able to order hundreds of thousands of items through their Google Assistant devices. They'll also get personalized recommendations based on previous purchases from Walmart. Researchers say safety systems meant to keep cars from drifting into another lane or to warn drivers of vehicles in their blind spots are starting to live up to their potential. Two studies released by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety found vehicles with lane-keeping and blind-spot monitoring systems had lower crash rates than the same vehicles without those systems. And the Village Voice, the alternative weekly newspaper that's been a mainstay on New York street corners for decades, is going digital. For the first time since 1955, it will no longer appear in print. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:23 now. We're talking about a potential Ventura and Divvy integration into Chicago. AJ LaTrace is with us today. He's an editor at Curb Chicago. And AJ, you know, one of the things that we mentioned here is that these Divvy stations, at least a quarter of them, are within about an eighth of a mile of a CTA or Metra station, according to the city. That's a pretty close proximity of some of these Divvy stations. So there is a potential here that if you put what the thinking is, if you put all of this together on one card, you'll get more action for both of them?
Yes. So, you know, and actually the contractor who operates the Divvy system, they run the bike share in other major cities like New York and D.C., which the Chicago Divvy system is modeled after. And, you know, they actually released some numbers earlier this year. And, you know, according to them, you know, nearly half of the trips of Divvy trips in Chicago are for people commuting to work. So, you know, putting everything under one fair card payment structure, it just seems to make sense.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier this is going to be on a smartphone app. Is it going to be a separate, a new app, or will it integrate both of these, the CDOT, or rather the CTA and also the Ventra together? And will there be a sense there that you'll get a cheaper ride? Will there be some sort of discount if you use both of these together?
Last week, a couple weeks ago, at the City Club of Chicago, CDOT reps and CTA reps were in attendance, and Sun-Times, asked about this and reported that it'll be actually the Ventra app. It's expected to be the Ventra app that you can download today for the CTA. And the timing is interesting also because the CTA released an announcement last week as well, suggesting or, you know, revealing that the Ventra app has been downloaded over 2 million times. So, you know, it hit a pretty big milestone recently. And it's collected nearly $250 million in transit fares just through the app. So it seems like there's going to be a lot of emphasis on, you know, getting folks to download the app and use the app, and then certainly, folks who plan on using Ventra for Divvy should maybe start thinking about downloading the app and getting familiar with it.
You mentioned how the Ventra system, or rather the Divvy system here, shapes up with other parts of the country. Can you give us more on that? I mean, how are we doing with this new bike sharing service? I mean, are people here like other cities using it a lot, or how do we compare?
I think Chicago is one of the bigger ones. The system was launched several years ago, back when his name was Gabe Klein, was the CDOT commissioner. And Gabe Klein was actually the DCDOT commissioner at the time they launched the Capital Bike Share. Just off the bat, we had people who were experienced with this stuff, you know, getting it set up and launched in Chicago. But, so Motivate, the operator, it's interesting. It seems like, you know, more folks are using the New York and DC bike share for commuting. But I think it's something that they see, you know, a use in Chicago and definitely more of an opportunity for that, you know, for that rider. But, you know, a lot of people use it just for recreation too. What's fascinating is that in Chicago, just earlier this year, Divvy announced that just in Chicago, they've hit over 10 million trips, which is pretty significant.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I see them almost all the time everywhere, so it's be interesting to see how this moves into the future. AJ, good of you to be with us this morning on the opening bell, as always, and we'll read more about this in Curb Chicago.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
All right. AJ LaTrace, editor at Curb Chicago. You can find more at chicago.curbed.com for more on the Ventra Divvy integration.
From ABC News Tech Trends, using technology to empower a new generation of girls.
They embody like bravery and respect.
An organization called Girls Who Code has set up 80 immersion camps across the country geared specifically toward girls. Today, they're busy programming robots to perform choreographed dances. It's the brainchild of Reshma Saujani.
And I'd go into robotics classes and computer science classes, and I'd see like hundreds of boys clamoring to be the next Steve Jobs or Mark Zuckerberg. And I was like, where are the girls?
In 2015, women held 57% of all professional occupations, yet they held only a quarter of all computing jobs. Saujani says the problem isn't that young girls have no interest.
We do a poor job of showing girls the connection between technology and making a difference.
And these students are walking away with newfound knowledge and confidence.
Now seeing so many different girls with the same interests as me, it's really amazing.
With Tech Trends, I'm Mona Rivera, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Glad you're here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. About half of the private companies with valuations exceeding $1 billion, those are known as unicorns, by the way, in the startup business, they wouldn't have earned that mythical title without the use of some complex stock mechanics. This according to a new study by business professors at the University of British Columbia and Stanford University. We thought we'd talk a little bit more about this with Julie Frage, who's with Bloomberg. She's a writer there who's been covering some of this, and Julie is with us this morning. Julie, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell. I guess, you know, the first question I have for you is, you know, is there something fishy going on here? What is happening with some of these startups and their valuations?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's always known it's kind of harder to value these companies. The financial information isn't as easily available. How do you really project, you know, earnings 12 months out and things like that? But there's a little, it gets a little bit trickier than that, even based on a study that was done by professors at, I believe it was University of British Columbia and Stanford a few months ago.
Well, talk to us a little bit about that, because, you know, I guess when I say the word fishy, they probably put something nefarious on what's happening here. Is it that, or is it just something complicated?
No, it is kind of fishy. So when you think about shares issued in the public market, a lot of times, and unless they're evenly valued in the sense that, like, you know, common shares versus preferred or whatever, they all basically have the same rights and whatnot. What's happening here is that there's sometimes when these private companies do new funding rounds, some of the investors might say, yeah, we'll invest at this valuation, but you need to give us something like, you know, liquidation preference, where we get our money back before someone else does if for some reason you guys go bankrupt. Or when you IPO, we get an IPO ratchet where we're guaranteed 1.25 our earnings, the amount that we've put in. So if you put in 10, you get 12.50 back per share, something like that. And those shares are being valued at the same as the ones that they aren't getting those preferences. And these professors are onto a good point, saying, like, that's not really fair. If you're getting these extra preferences, that share shouldn't be valued the same. And when you calculate that total valuation, they're all given that same value. And that's where the big discrepancies come in.
Because these are some of the people that have really put in their time, blood, sweat, tears, and even a lot of money to get these companies to an IPO, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, think of it this way. Like, if both you and I had shares of Uber and say, I have an IPO ratchet on my shares where I'm guaranteed 2 times my money back, my shares shouldn't have the same value as your shares, right? Like, that's not fair. You wouldn't be very happy with that trade, would you?
No, not at all.
And I mean, the people that are generally getting screwed over are, you know, the startup's employees, because they're not the ones asking for these special preferences. The ones that are asking for this are the venture capitalists or the private equity funds, you know, whoever is, you know, putting money in towards that fundraising round.
And there are some real life examples of this happening right now, aren't there? I'm thinking, you mentioned Uber, that's one of them, but Blue Apron is another that comes to mind.
Right. Blue Apron was one that had different provisions in there. There were some fintech companies. SoFi was mentioned. Prosper was mentioned. There were a lot of them. And, you know, you think about it this way. When a company can go out and recruit employees in a very tough market for Silicon Valley, and particularly for engineers, and say, you know, we just raised this new funding round, it increased our valuation by 50%. We're now valued at $25 billion. Like, that sounds better than saying, you know, yeah, we just did a funding round. It was just break even, we're valued at $10 billion. And having these provisions in there can often give you that higher valuation. And that's one of the big reasons that these companies do that.
Did the study from the University of Stanford and British Columbia, University of British Columbia, did they offer any guidance as to how this might even be simplified or made better for some of the parties that we were talking about earlier?
Well, their solution was just going back and finding out what the true valuation of the companies are. So if you open up the study, I link to it in my article so you can easily find it. You just hit download. It'll put it right on your computer. And it goes back and shows, you know, what the different valuation changes are based on these different ratchets. I can't remember exactly what it is, but like a ratchet based on how, like, if it's 1.25 times in the IPO or 1.5 to whatever, that they give you what exactly that valuation change should be. And it goes through a bunch of them. It does get fairly complicated, so that's why I tried to keep it pretty simple in my article. But if you go in the study and you want to dive deeper, it definitely has more information on that for people that are interested.
For some of these startups, this this really is life and death terms. And one of the I could see one of the downsides being here that if they didn't have a proper way of doing this, they're not going to really attract the kind of talent they need to push it toward an IPO. Is that a fair way to look at that?
Yeah, I mean, especially in a tight job market for Silicon Valley with engineers and whatnot, you obviously want to be a company that says, yeah, our valuation has consistently increased. We're now at, you know, X billion dollars in valuations. We just had a funding round from someone like a SoftBank or an Andreessen or one of those prominent names. That definitely helps a lot. And sometimes the companies, in order to be able to get that, they need to put these provisions in there.
We're seeing, I mentioned Uber earlier, and with all of the problems they're having, we see some of their initial investors saying, hey, we want out now. Is this tied at all? Is this tied more to the behavior of what happened with the Uber leaders, or are we seeing some of this unicorn stuff in there as well?
Uber actually was mentioned in the study, and they said that their valuation of roughly $69 billion now is only about 12% higher than what the fair value calculation would be. So Uber hasn't actually used too many provisions. So in that case, it's definitely more tied to people worried about leadership. Maybe they just want to hedge their bets a little bit if some of the investors that are trying to sell some of their shares are ones that have been in it from the beginning, you know, pay out some of your limited partners, stuff like that.
Well, Julie, we've been hearing rumors that there are more tech IPOs coming this year after we haven't seen very many over the last year or so. The question is, what advice would you give to investors who are looking at some of these startups so that they may prevent, you know, may not get burned?
I mean, I would say, like, buying a company on the IPO is generally not a very good decision unless you can get in at the pre-IPO price or whatever it's going to open at pre-market. So say Blue Apron had their public offering at, what was it, like $12 a share, $10 a share. If you can get in at 10, then maybe you'd be okay. But if you're one of those people that like tries to buy at the start of trading, you don't end up getting in until about 15. That's generally not a good rule. So I would say, you know, wait for it to play out a little bit, especially given how some of these companies have performed since they've gone public, like Blue Apron, like Snapchat, and then a few others.
And certainly if you're being recruited by one of these tech startups that is promising you shares of the company, you should probably do your due diligence to the second degree, shouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely see, you know, what the last few rounds have looked like and see if they've had to do some provisions. Even maybe just straight up ask in the interview, say, you know, that's great you guys have done these funding rounds, but have there been any provisions that have been attached to them?
Julie, again, thanks for joining us, and thanks for the information about this.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Julie Verhage is a reporter at Bloomberg, and you can read more of this story online at Bloomberg.com. We're going to link out to her story as well this morning here from the Opening Bell on the WGN Twitter site.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow Futures looking for a positive negative open on Wall Street later this morning, 43 points. NASDAQ Futures are down about 17. S&P futures are down about 7. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Another day of contract lows on the wheat market at the Chicago Board of Trade. Yesterday weighed down again by abundant global supplies and technical wheat selling as prices extended a decline that started in early July. Corn futures weakened slightly to the lowest levels in about a year. Soybean prices, on the other hand, were narrowly higher yesterday. So looking at the end of the day, the September wheat contract down 6¾ cents a bushel, December corn down 3 cents, but November soybeans ended the day with a gain of 1¼ cents a bushel. Finally, a break in the decline in cattle futures for the first time in 5 sessions. The live cattle contracts traded higher yesterday. Some bargain buying and also some short covering taking place in the cattle market. So let's look at the good news first. The cattle market showing gains of of 85 cents a hundredweight yesterday in the August contract, and August feeder cattle gained $2.42. Meanwhile, live hog futures at the Mercantile Exchange down 85 cents a hundredweight for the day. Coming up tomorrow, the opening day of the Half Century of Progress show in Rantoul, Illinois. Should be a good one, as it always is. And then that wraps up on Sunday, and beginning Tuesday of next week, the Farm Progress show in Decatur, Illinois. We'll see you at both of those shows. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of other stories that we have for you this morning here in the opening bell. Governor Scott Walker's top aide says he believes nearly all of the employees at a southeastern Wisconsin Foxconn plant would be Wisconsin residents. Democrats on the legislature's Joint Finance Committee asked State Department of Administration Secretary Scott Neitzel during a hearing yesterday on that $3 billion worth of incentives that Wisconsin is offering Foxconn, on the likelihood of Foxconn delivering its promise to employ up to 13,000 people. The man said that the plant will likely be highly automated, but he believes the company will still employ 13,000 people. He said since the plant will be so automated, the jobs will be fairly high-end. He predicted 90% of those employees will be Wisconsin residents. Of course, that's what they say now. A lot of these jobs will be high, as he said, high-end jobs. That means they'll be technical in nature. It remains to be seen whether that many people are in southeast Wisconsin ready to fill those jobs. So it is almost certain that some of those jobs will have to come from northern Illinois or surrounding states. Federal researchers, or regulators rather, searching for money laundering schemes are digging deeper into who's behind luxury real estate purchases in certain parts of the U.S. The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network says it's adding wire transfers to the list of all cash buys it monitors during certain types of high-end deals. Previous orders on such monitoring covered property purchase using methods like cashier's checks or money orders. CBS Television and Hispanic media activists say the network has stepped up its efforts to increase Latino representation in its shows. In a statement yesterday, the National Latino Media Coalition said it was heartened by CBS doubling the number of Latino writers and series cast members since 2016. And also today, a Washington appeals court says federal energy regulators fell short in evaluating environmental impacts of a natural gas pipeline that carries gas through Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit Court on Tuesday agreed with the Sierra Club in a ruling that officials needed more detail in their environmental study of the Southeast Market Pipeline project. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Wednesday, August 23rd, 2017. Labor Department's Bureau of Labor Statistics is set to release the weekly unemployment claims report. The report typically comes out each Thursday, and they can be among the strong indicators of how the U.S. labor market is performing in any given month. Usually high requests for jobless insurance checks can signal that the overall unemployment rate likely performed poorly. The opposite is true when applications for benefits decrease significantly. National unemployment has been hovering in the range of 4.3 to 4.5% for several months, and a historically low level of joblessness. In other reports today, Freddie Mac, the mortgage company, releases weekly mortgage rates, and the National Association of Realtors releases existing home sales figures for July. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, August 23rd.